You're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Looseheads podcast.
Hello there and welcome along to this week's episode of the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with me, Chris Hill. As always, we love doing these podcasts. So when we receive some of the feedback we've had, we have done over sort of the last week or so following our podcast with Benjamin Kayser, it is really pleasing to myself, Rob, Mark and Dave, because not only do we enjoy doing these podcasts, but knowing that you guys out there enjoy them too, makes it even more rewarding for us. So we really appreciate your feedback and thank you so much for the comments and sort of the messages that have come through from that and all the podcasts we've done so far. And I am reliably informed, and Rob will confirm with this, that the podcasts are now on Spotify. Is that right, Rob?
That is right. Yeah, finally on Spotify. Finally.
Do subscribe. Do like on Spotify, and Rob's pushed them out on LinkedIn as well today. So we are making waves and broadening our horizons when it comes to social media with the Looseheads podcast. So good work from Rob on that. And I did mention Mark there, but it is just Rob and Dave today who are joining me from the Looseheads Foundation, because Mark is enjoying himself on a Christmas party, I believe.
Yeah, a bit of a pullout by all accounts. pretty poor excuse, really, but might have to try and dial him in later and see what he's got to say after a few more beers.
He's only good for the Mars 15 anyway, so it's fine. It's a shame as well, because he's a massive fan of our next guest as well.
Yes, nice segue, Rob. Nice segue. And we will introduce our next guest now to the Looseheads podcast. And it's delighted to say that we have current Dragons player and former Leicester Tiger and Exeter Chief Greg Maitman joining us on the podcast today. So, Greg, brilliant to have you on. First of all, how's life been for you in Wales? I mean, just before we pressed record, you sound like a very busy man at the moment.
Hi, yeah. Thanks very much for having me. Life in Wales is really good. Thank you. Fortunately, this year has been really low key, and you know, nothing too tumultuous has happened in rugby. So yeah, it's been really casual, mate. No, it's look, it's been a strange year, hasn't it, for so many people, and just even outside of the rugby community. But I'm really, really delighted to be here, and it's a great environment to be part of.
Yeah, you said that not a lot's been going on, Greg, but I mean, just normally when we do these podcasts, I go on to social media and look at Twitter and Instagram to see what our guests have been up to. And I went onto your Twitter, Greg, and it was just full of beer and beer promotions, which I'm absolutely can get behind. So there is an important reason why that is the case. And I know you've just relaunched the People's Captain, if that's right, Greg. So just tell our listeners a little bit more about that, because there is a really strong message behind it, isn't there?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the plug.
Much shameless.
So we launched People's Captain as its own sort of fledgling thing during lockdown, and it was always a bit of a hobby for me, to be honest. Like, brewing, did some brews with some breweries up in Leicester there, and I loved it, because there was this real kind of rugby player makes a beer and you kind of have a chat with the punters and get stuck in. And brewing, such a friendly sort of industry as well, everybody kind of knows everybody. And then when lockdown kind of hit and I was staring down the barrel of being unemployed, I was thinking about, you know, lots of the things I was doing, and I've always been one that kind of does what I really enjoy first, and then normally I'll work out the kind of commercial side of it later. And brewing I absolutely love, because I'm a real sort of process person, you know, like you get your hops, you get your malt, you get the recipe, and you just sort of follow this thing. It's pretty cool. And I was kind of thinking about how I could do it, but support something that was really important to me. So I sort of did this kind of session. I chatted with my best mate from school, Jay, who's a hedge fund wanker down in London, and you know, basically, you know, that his job is to make the rich richer, I suppose. And had a chat, and I was like, look, this is what I want to do. Yeah, love it, love your idea, let's go and have a chat with Stu, who's the who helped co-found us, what we're doing now. And Stu is basically Mr. Drinks, who he was involved in, like, Brooklyn Lager, Relentless, when they were part of Coke, and you know, huge brands, and how they went into market. And we sort of had a chat with him, and I was kind of thinking, oh, maybe he'll just like be a consultant and help us. But he loved what we were trying to do. And he just said, look, if you're up for it, then I'll come on board. And I've always kind of been, I'd rather, you know, have more people involved and have more sort of heads as part of something than I would sort of try and keep everything to myself, because it would be so much bigger and more exciting to be everybody else's ideas. But the back to the point of why it's important, and I suppose where the narrative mixes nicely with Looseheads, is that, you know, you guys will know in sort of 2017, 2018, I was pretty public about where I'd had my struggles. And I think the reason I did that was there was a really poignant moment in my recovery, if you want to call it recovery, where I realized that I wasn't the only person that was feeling the way I was. And I was sort of having a chat with one of the lads, and he was like, well, you know, so-and-so takes medication, or his mum takes medication, or, and then it sort of did the numbers of like 1 in 4 blokes struggle with this. I was like, well, that's fucking loads of us that are struggling with this. So as soon as I kind of realized that I wasn't the only one, I kind of thought, well, if I feel like a bit of a helmet for a couple of weeks by putting myself out there and feeling a little bit vulnerable, but it just, even if it just helped one person realize that they maybe aren't on their own, then I'm quite happy to take that risk. And the support was unbelievable. And I know you're going to ask me about Leicester later on, but the supporters up at Leicester were incredibly kind to me. And it's been a huge part of my career, I suppose. So anyway, that's the kind of me personally. And I was really keen with People's Captain to sort of try and knit the two together. And I think British culture is, I don't know about you guys, but if I want to open up to my mates or I want to talk about something important, we'll often do that over a beer. And I think it is part of our culture where that's the time where we de-stress, and that's the time where we let our guard down a little bit and we can have those conversations that mean a lot to us. I definitely think that we can take that far too far. But what we're trying to be sort of part of and help support and encourage is to facilitate those conversations. So that's why at the heart of everything we do, we're creating the People's Captain Foundation, where we want to raise £1 million for mental health. And I know Looseheads, for example, is much more focused on the awareness building side of things. And one of the reasons the foundation won't be focusing on that is because guys like you are doing such a good job. What we're going to be focusing on is action and what people can do about it. Because my biggest fear after this year is that we all have much more awareness and we all suddenly realize that we're a lot sadder than we were, but we don't know what to do about it. And that's what we're going to invest our fundraising into, is either initiatives that exist, or if they don't, then we'll make them. I just realized that's probably a much longer answer than you wanted, but I kind of have to give you the whole picture. Go.
No, it's exactly what the description that I was looking for, really, Greg, because I think for me, you know, you do, as you said quite right there, you do go to the pub, you have a pint, you probably talk a load of nonsense, you probably talk about Eddie Jones's tactics for England or whatever like that, but it is a way of socially communicating with the people close to you, isn't it? You know, going for a pint and having that frank conversation with them. And I think the idea that you've got with the People's Captain just encapsulates that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can spend your time trying to kind of change cultures and, you know, convince people that drinking's not a good thing to do. But there's obviously good and bad to both. And, you know, I do appreciate there's this sort of question mark about, you know, alcohol and mental health. But, you know, like I was talking about Jay earlier on, is that's my best mate, and I've known him for nearly 20 years, but still, to have that conversation with him, I don't think we're trained to have deep conversations that we feel particularly uncomfortable about, if you know what I mean. So even with someone I've known for that length of time, it's like, listen, can we just have a beer and talk about something? I don't know, and I'd be interested to know what you guys think, but I don't know if this is, as blokes, I think we're particularly poor at having meaningful conversation. And I think we're better at doing it over an activity, whether that's going fishing, playing golf, having a pint, whatever it is. And to be honest with you, I don't really care if you have a pint of People's Captain while you're doing it. I just want you to have that conversation. That's the most important thing.
I think you're spot on with that, that kind of as blokes, we know we're bloody awful at talking about things, whether it's speaking to your wife or girlfriend or your partner, or, you know, whether it's opening up to your mates. And like you say, if we can create some kind of environment where we do feel comfortable, like something we always say is that, you know, we obviously all played rugby to varying degrees, certainly not to Chris shaking his head there, you know, not to any sort of significant level really for the most part, but that kind of treated our mental health. It was an opportunity to get out there with your mates, kind of take your mind off work and all the other pressures out there, and anything I think we can do to create more environments like that where it feels like we've got a safe space, it's got to be a good thing.
Well, I think the point that you made there sort of speaks to me about the sort of accessibility of vulnerability. So, and I think one of these things this year, if we've learned anything from 2020, other than when the best time to go to the supermarket is we've learned a lot more about ourselves and we've learned a lot more about other people. So we've got this way better level of self-awareness and hopefully much more empathy for other people. I think we've definitely realized that different people cope with different stresses in very different ways. And it's not right or wrong. It's just how people deal with it, isn't it? Like some people are particularly scared of coronavirus, and that's not wrong. That's just how they are about it, or they're more nervous about protocols and stuff. And for ourselves, I think we've, you know, I've definitely learned, like, it's tough to do everything here at home in your office when I'm used to being with people and having that sort of energy and catching off people. And I know my rugby life, that is quite different, but it is a different environment at the moment where you're sort of in, your time together is quite, you know, structured, and, you know, you're not sort of hanging around with people. So the point is that, like, where are we going to create these times and moments that we can be vulnerable with other people? And I think that's what I was trying to come back to there. It's this guy early on in our launch, everything broke on me on the website the night before launch. And this, I'm sure this will all come out one day when we're like Gymshark and everyone's wondering how we did it, and we'll tell you all the stories. But literally everything broke. And I mean, I've been pretty stressed in my life, but that was right up there. And I was there with the developer. I mean, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with this code and stuff either. So I'm like, oh yeah, just need that button there. And I need this here. And anyway, we're sort of trying to put all this stuff together. So I was watching the orders the next day. I seen this guy that had put in three orders and they were going to three addresses. And I was like, oh, for goodness sake, something's happened to us here. So I rang him up and just said, hey, it's Greg from People's Captain. Just wanted to check everything's okay. You know, have we tripled your order and sent it out somewhere? And he said, no, I watched your video on the website and it's really inspired me to actually take this really seriously, have a conversation with my mates. So we're all going to get on a Zoom together, do a beer tasting, and have a conversation about how we're feeling. We've had a tough year, and I think it's really important. So it only takes one person to take the lead, doesn't it? To say, hey, listen, Dave, how are you feeling, mate? Like, seeing you've had a stressful week at work, or Rob, what's going on? I think there is that element of someone has to step outside their comfort zone and kind of get going with it. And I don't know what the solutions are. And obviously there's, you know, we could debate that for a million years, but in the new normal, if that is a real term, I think it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And maybe just to put Rob a little bit on the spot here, when I ask him this question, it's kind of what you just touched on there, Greg, about sort of what People's Captain is doing is sort of starting the conversation for other people. And the Loose Heads guys have a number of ambassadors who do great work for them. And we've had them on the podcast, and a few of them have said to us, well, we were just doing it on Instagram. We put Loose Heads out there, and they reached out to us and started a conversation. So I guess, Rob, you've seen exactly the same sort of thing that Greg's talking about with Loose Heads.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's all about creating that safe environment or doing something like, you know, like Greg's doing, you know, making people feel like they're in a safe environment. So, you know, guys in the pub having a beer, making that safe environment so that they're feeling comfortable to sort of open up that conversation. And just, it just takes that one first step for someone to say, how are you, mate? Are you all right? Yeah. Are you actually all right? Mm. So it's just that first conversation and making sure that people feel safe in that environment to start that conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, Greg, you mentioned before sort of about the reason why you're doing the People's Captain in terms of sort of your personal experiences. And you mentioned there that you've been incredibly brave and open and honest about sort of the struggles you experience. And Rob mentioned there that it's all about starting that conversation. And I guess when you first opened up, you did feel like it was necessary to tell your story from there.
Yeah, I think it was weird because I think when I was struggling, and I suppose I appreciate that because of the type of person I am, it's very obvious when things aren't right. And this is something I've talked about a lot with my mates, is when I was, you know, head gone and, you know, not really interested in being at the training ground. But that was really obvious because I wasn't first to stop, crack a joke. I wasn't first to, you know, get stuck in. But then you think about those people who are naturally more introverted, who, you know, we probably wouldn't really know where they are with stuff. And I think part of my ambition with what I did was often probably for those people that, you know, might not reach out or they might not start that conversation, but at least they know. And I think sometimes you have to appreciate that not everybody wants to have meaningful deep conversation, and I'll be honest with you, I find it very tiring. Like, since coming out and talking about my struggle with mental health, I'm asked to go on a million podcasts and interview about it and whatever, but there's quite a lot of personal, like, demons that I have to cross and sort of bring up a load of old, you know, bad scars to sort of explain, and it's tiring. And I think for people who that's not particularly natural to, because it's certainly not natural to me, that's a difficult thing to do. So remember before I was talking about self-awareness and empathy, I just think it's not necessarily, I totally agree, Rob, with your point earlier, is almost that asking twice, are you okay, mate? Are you really okay? Like, it gives that opportunity. But having more empathy just means actually listening to people. So, oh, you said you were going to go and look at a new car next week, or whatever it is, you're like actually caring and listening and remembering information that people are telling us about what they're doing in their lives, helps us to continue that sort of almost meaningless conversation. And then that will get us to where we need to, if you know what I mean, because realistically, like, I've maybe exchanged 10 messages with Rob. Like, am I gonna sit down and be like, oh, I've been really stressed about this over this week? That's probably not gonna happen. It has to be a nurtured thing that's organic. And I think that's what we need to be careful of with just telling people to open up all the time, is, you know, your feelings and what you're trying to protect needs to be dealt with the people that you trust the most, and how you nurture that small, close-knit community that's next to you is probably the most important. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that you made a really interesting point there about, just because you've, you know, told your story and opened up about your own story, it doesn't mean that you want to talk about it 24/7. I think that's, you know, what we're trying to do at Loose Heads, to sort of push out these bite-sized chunks of information, prevent, promote, educate, signpost. So if some people, you know, come across our page and they take one or two things, then we win a little bit. Obviously, we'll never win, but we win a little bit. One thing we've spoken a lot about sort of the negative sides of social media on this podcast. But to flip that on its head a little bit, obviously, when you know, you sort of told your story, you obviously spoke through social media. Rugby obviously prides itself on its inclusivity and supportive nature. Sort of, what were the messages of support like through social media?
Oh, unbelievable. And I again, I had to, before I posted it, I was like, I'm not doing this for anything to come back. It's literally, I just hope that someone goes, thanks a lot, that means a lot to me. And I just turned my phone over and just left it because I was pretty nervous about putting out there what I'd put out. Although, to be fair, I suppose I didn't go into like a load of detail about how I felt and what had happened and all the rest of it. It was more where I got to. But man, I had, you know, people that had said, I'm printing this out for some kids in my school. There was, you know, fans at Leicester that had said, I've been really struggling, but didn't know how to start this conversation with my friends and family. And this is really going to help me do it. You know, the list goes on. And some of those people that reached out and offer of support still text me a couple of times a week now and just say, mate, how's everything going? How's the injury healing up? Everything all right? Like, you know, they're just absolute legends that you couldn't wish better for. And I think it's a weird feeling where it's just like this unintended consequence of doing something where literally I was delighted that a few people had got some support, but these people that have reached out in their own time to make sure I'm okay, absolutely amazing. Couldn't have asked for anything better.
Yeah, and I guess as well, Greg, you were talking about, and Rob, I think, used a really good phrase there about bite-sized little chunks and those little things and those people getting in touch with you, Greg. It might be the smallest thing, but I know Lewis has used the hashtag tackle the stigma. I know you've hashtagged end the stigma as well before. And all these little things are working towards that common goal to keep tackling the stigma. Because you, as you mentioned before, it is very difficult for blokes in particular to have a conversation.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And I think this is the difficult piece. And I think, you know, when I was thinking about the foundation and what we were going to actually, you know, put our £1 million when we get there into, is it's very difficult to just justify or to sort of measure the success of raising awareness, like, because how many more people are going to speak more freely about it, doing constant surveys. And I think maybe because it's been such a big part of my life over the last few years, that's kind of not lost its importance, but I am aware, like, I don't need to be told twice that it's a big problem. But I think the more that we can appreciate it and tackle the stigma, if there is still one, the better we're going to be able to lay those foundations for these conversations like Rob and I are talking about there, to make it easier. And I think what, essentially, from my understanding of the conversation or countless conversations I've had with either professionals or just people like me, the number one reason that people don't talk is because they're either scared of how that's going to be received or they're scared to admit it themselves. So it's effectively fear driven. And it is a pretty frightening prospect, to be honest. And like, there's no point me sitting here and saying there's nothing to be scared of, because when you feel at complete rock bottom, that's pretty scary. Do you know, like, when something crosses your mind, you're like, oh my God, I didn't realize I could go to that place. So it is a scary thing to do. But the more that we show community and support, the easier it's going to become for people, because they're not on their own. And that's the whole piece around People's Captain. And people ask us, why have you launched entirely direct to consumer, and, you know, you're not going on trade or anything like that yet? It's because I want our customers to be able to speak to us directly. I don't want them, you know, off the radar. I want to be able to help them as much as we can, be as involved and included with them.
G'day guys, it's Brad Shields here. I'm a Loose Heads ambassador. You're listening to a Loose Heads podcast. Mental health is just as important as physical health.
in terms of people's captain as well, Greg. Obviously, it's something that you do have on the side with rugby, and I guess players now are making themselves more aware in terms of life after rugby as well, because as we know, it is such a dangerous sport and it can be over in an instant, and it's sort of the medical reasons behind that have been highlighted this week in particular. But is it really important to, for players to start thinking about life after rugby as well in this present day?
Yeah, I'm actually really pleased that you asked that question, because it's something I get asked a lot, is, you know, does doing something on the side of playing distract from playing? And my answer is it never has. To be honest, I find it helps me the most. And I did finish my MBA this year, and the biggest part of my research into that for our dissertation-y project work stuff was basically proving this point, that essentially what we, as an athlete, you have this identity that you link with being an athlete, right? So for my 5 year, or the last 3 years of being a Leicester Tiger, my identity was linked to, if I'd allowed it to be, was linked to being bottom of the table, underperforming, really high stress. Whereas having something outside of your one channel helps you build your resilience elsewhere. So I can go and do some coffee stuff, I can go and do this beer stuff, I can do, obviously I wasn't doing people's captain in the same way when I was back there, but what it helps you do is when you leave the training ground, rugby's done, and then you allow yourself to do something else and you create space for yourself. And I would 100%, and this isn't just for rugby players, I can give you a very short answer to the question. 100%, you need to do something outside of sport, full stop. But I think for everybody, whatever you do, you need to have something that is outside of your main domain, because you personally need it, because you are more than just what your job is plus family. Like, you have your own interests and you have your own things that you want to pursue, whether that's fishing, golf, tennis, or, you know, if it's not something active, reading, academia, whatever it is, because that's for you. And then your whole identity and belonging isn't based upon just purely results. It's like this whole other holistic part to it as well. So yeah, 100%, it's good.
Just on that, was it you that took it upon yourself to go and involve yourself in other stuff, or was it other players talking to you, or was it an agent or the club who sort of pushed it?
No, to be honest, I've always been quite driven with the stuff outside of rugby. I think because I've seen so many mates have to retire through injury over my career, that, you know, watching them go into a variety of jobs that they either love or hate, I think scared me, because I think I put so much into what I do, whether it's work or otherwise, that I think the thought of being stuck in a job for 60 hours a week that I absolutely hate terrifies me more than not having anything, to be perfectly honest. So I've been pretty motivated myself, and that's changed over time. You know, like I've had a property company, been trying to open a coffee shop for 3 years before shit hit the fan at Leicester. So, you know, I've got a wide array of interests, but you know, it's just about matching that to a commercial route, I guess.
Do you think rugby, maybe sport in general, does enough to kind of prepare players for life after rugby and to sort of have that financial independence moving forward?
No, it doesn't, but it's very difficult. And you know, we'll probably bring the RPA into this at some point, and to confirm and to lay this out before it may seem like I'm just trying to set them on fire, is that the RPA is full of very, very good people and very, very well-meaning people. The issue that the RPA have, and I have no issue saying this to you because I said the same thing to Hoppers when I was a rep for them, is that the governance of the game, in my opinion, is the biggest issue to rugby. So the PRL, or the owners of the club, effectively can't agree, or particularly in the latest debacle that we had, where they couldn't agree on what they wanted to do. So the RPA was trying to represent the players, but if the PRL couldn't agree anyway, then they pretty much haven't got any grounds to negotiate. And, you know, Genji and I put a lot of work into seeing what that could look like as a set, you know, as a real independent union. And that wasn't because we don't think the RPA does a good job. It's just to see if having out and out independence could force them, the PRL owners, to make decisions that are in the best interest of the game as opposed to themselves. And I think the RPA, the difficulty they have is for them to do what they need to do to help support rugby players with after rugby. Ultimately, it comes down to cash, doesn't it? Like, it's very expensive to send people through degrees. It's very expensive to get stuff sorted for players in terms of proper vocational training. But what they have got a lot better at over the last few years is sorting out work experience. And I think that's been great. When I was at Exeter, Josh Frape was my RPA rep there. And he was brilliant. I did loads of work experience there, and I hated some of it. But that's perfect, because I now can tell you that I don't want to go into stockbroking, for example, because it was nothing like what I thought it was going to be like. And I sat in the office for a day and thought, no, this is not what I want to do. So there are definitely some positives about how they do it. I think probably the biggest issue we have at the moment in terms of what can be done outside of rugby is, you know, we've all seen that financially the game doesn't stand up. So it's going to be very, very difficult for the RPA to get the funding it needs to do to fight the players' legal battles and supply the player development side of stuff as well. And I can tell you as a player, the one that you definitely, definitely want is the legal side. And if you get the other bit, that's a bonus. So, yeah. Felt like I ended up on a bit of a rant there about apologise about that.
No, because I was going to talk obviously about player welfare, Greg, in terms of sort of the concussion stories that have gone out this week. And a lot of people that I've spoken to on the record is that they've said that a lot more needs to be done to protect the players who are the prize assets of the game. Do you feel like that as well, that in terms of maybe the concussion element, for example, that players do need the support and the help, because there seems to be a lot of players who say, oh, it might not be there?
I think that it's so difficult because the consequences are still very unknown of you know, prolonged concussion, what happens, you know, in much later life. I think even with the, you know, the scary stuff from NFL, and obviously these ex-pros have come out now, and that is harrowing, you know, especially where Alex Popham is at the moment. And it just doesn't bear thinking about, I guess. It's just because we don't know, it's difficult to then say we're not doing enough. Because if we don't know, how can we say what is enough? And I actually think that if you think about what, going back to the RPA, do is they will give concussion education every year on what to look out for, what to do, spotting things in teammates and whatever. They trialing a new thing of testing, the saliva testing that was getting trialed. Apologise if you can hear the dogs kicking off. Someone's just rung the doorbell. But, you know, I think they are trying to do as much as they can. But I guess the real question is, how do we know what's enough? And that's the real difficulty is, I don't think the people at the governing body, at the governing bodies, are sat there thinking, ah, well, we're just going to end up with a load of guys with brain damage when they're older, and so what? I think it's very difficult for them to sit there and think, what are the possible consequences? Because we don't know yet. Does that answer your question. Do you know what I mean? It's such a difficult one. I think nobody really knows. Although, having said that, that, you know, there has absolutely been some shocking cases of player management with concussions from clubs. And I think, you know, that's not a good thing and we should absolutely be dealt with. But it just probably needs to be addressed sooner rather than later, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree with you, Greg. It's still a lot of unknowns around it. And obviously what the news that has come out this week is we're still in very, very early stage of that. And as you quite rightly say, we don't know too much detail about it. So, but in just terms of looking after players and futures of players as well and bringing it back to sort of playing the game, Greg, I know in terms of there is a little piece of history which belongs to you in terms of being, I think, the first Leicester player to play in all three positions across the front row. And we've seen the last couple of you know, people who may be watching this, Greg is very, very proud of that achievement. But I'm sure you would have seen, Greg, that in England, they have, for the grassroots game at least, taken away scrums and mauls due to COVID-19 protocols. And a lot of front row players are very, not scared, but they're very concerned about the future of their role in the sport. Their core skills will not be exercised. And we had Benjamin Cage on the podcast last week, and he was in agreement that they can't, these have to be temporary. You can't carry on with rugby like this for a long period of time. And I think they are, if you hope that. But do you kind of worry maybe for a generation of front row players that they may be lost to this situation?
Again, you know, it's so difficult to speculate, isn't it? Like, if it's for 6 months and then, you know, we're all vaccinated against COVID and, you know, crack on. You know, I think the game itself has come under a fair amount of scrutiny over the last few weeks with rule changes and the way it's been played at the moment. And it's all just quite, I just feel like it's in a fairly negative space, if you know what I mean. Rugby's a frigging awesome game. You know, you watch that England-France final again. It's edge of your seat stuff, kicking or not. Like, it's a real competition physically, tactically, you know, it's a really exciting game to watch. I think the worry for, so I know I'm not specifically answering this question on grassroots props, but I think the worry for those young lads or the next generation of players coming in is, what are they looking up to at the moment? Like, the sort of role modelling of the game that they have at the moment is what concerns me. So I mentioned earlier about the governance of the game, that concerns me. And, you know, this handling of player welfare and injury management and what we do when we finish, that also concerns me. And I'm not saying, so that means we need to do this, we need to do that, we need to do whatever, because I don't know all the answers. Of course, I have opinions, but, you know, I don't think I'm going to be right on all of them. So I think, you know, when I think about when my son tells me I want to play rugby when I'm older, I'm like, make sure, you know, we've got something else, because it's taken me a while to realise that it's really not as professional a game as it wants to be. So it's more probably the bigger picture as a whole, rather than, I think, looking at a generation of grassroots front rowers. And of course, I hope it's just short term.
Yeah, definitely, Greg. I mean, you touched on if your son did want to come to you and say, I wanted to play rugby, would you have any concerns with him playing? Or, as you just said there, it's more about sort of looking at the bigger picture rather than just a generation of players?
Oh, I've told him, mate. I've told him that I've done it for too long. He's got to get good at football so that I don't have to do it for much longer. No, he's expressed a bit of an interest. He's in no rush. And neither am I. I want him to just do whatever he's happy with.
Who's he going to represent if he plays football, though, Greg? That's the question.
Yeah, I'm not a massive, massive football fan.
Okay.
I used to be a Spurs fan, and then I watched Amazon Prime All or Nothing with Man City in it. And then we all got obsessed with Man City, and I decided I was going to move to be a Man City fan just because I got obsessed with Pep. So, I mean, you know, I know that there's going to be some football fans out there that think that's, you know, a massive crime. But, you know, you think about my day job is all about winning and losing and whatever. I just want to enjoy myself. And I think Pep is the man for that.
He might well be your manager for Mars 15, but we'll get onto that a little bit later on.
Great suggestion. I'm trying to join down while we're talking.
Hi guys, I'm Sam James. I'm a Loose Heads ambassador, and you're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Make your mental health a priority.
You talk about the winning and losing now. Let's just come on to your playing career, Greg, if you don't mind. And we'll come on to Leicester, but you were obviously with Exeter Chiefs as well. And they're going through a very strong period at the moment, aren't they, with League and European Cup success. I mean, you were there and experienced the environment. What do you think makes it so special that the Rob Baxter and the team seem to have just got absolutely nailed on at the moment?
Yeah, I left Exeter to go to Leicester to win the Premiership, which has worked out really, really well. You know, it's funny talking to the whenever I've caught up with a few of the boys that are there, not a lot has changed dramatically since you know we were there before. But that's always, in my opinion, kind of been Rob's approach. Is he's never really changed a lot every year. He's very steady with his recruitment, very steady in the way that he coaches and addresses. You know, that the environment is so good. Everything is looked after. All you focus on is you review the game at the beginning of the week that you've just played. You prepare for the next game. You play the next game with only that preparation in your head. And then you have a great time with the lads afterwards because you've normally pumped someone. And then you come back on the Monday and review it and go around again. And I think what they've got is just this magic mix of unbelievable working environment in a lovely part of the world to live in with a really, really solid foundation of great people there, mixed with this incredibly stable machine-like coaching style. And you know, he said himself that him and Ali have been there for a decade. Like they were playing the same style, in inverted commas, in the Championship, but they've just slowly developed and slowly tweaked it as they move and got a little bit of stardust as and where. If you think about all the other teams, everybody else gets a new coach and wants to change entirely how they play the game every 2-3 seasons. And then you've got to change your squad over. Then you've got to do everything else that goes around, all your S&C, all the stuff that goes with your playing style has to change as well. So it's not really a big surprise if you've seen that in progress, I guess. But how many kind of club owners are going to have 10 years worth of patience to stick by someone and push them through? But I think it's the best story in rugby at the moment that, you know, effectively that model works.
And just in terms of sort of your last career there, you mentioned that you did move to try and win the Premiership, and the club had been through a difficult period in terms of the results and the off-field stuff, which you've touched on already. But just what was it like to be a Leicester Tiger first and foremost, Greg? Because we had, as I mentioned before, we had Benjamin Kayser on, and he said it was a special place to play. Guy Thompson, we had on in Series 1, was just in awe of the club when he joined. So what is it like to be a Leicester Tiger? Because they are a club steeped in history and no one could take that away from them.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I think when you get the opportunity to sign for Leicester, regardless of wherever they are, it is like signing for the Man United of football. Wherever Man United are in the table, you can't deny their history, can you? I think I'll always remember the conversation that I had with Cockers when I signed there. And he just said that everybody wants to beat Leicester, regardless of where we are, because it's us and because everybody hates us. Everybody ups their game by 10-15%, and that's what you've got to get used to. And it's definitely true. You know, Worcester were our banana team for the last couple of years, and they just absolutely loved sticking it to us. And it's an incredibly special place from that point of view, that it is kind of them against the world, if you know what I mean. I mean, obviously things didn't end probably quite the way I would have liked them to after 5 good years there. You know, I've got some people that I do care about a lot, and you know, very grateful for all the opportunities and stuff that I had as being part of there. But I think it was right for me to move on. I mean, obviously I would have preferred not to have been sacked, but you know, is what it is.
But you talked before as well, Greg, about the sort of the teammates that are still there and some of the guys that gave you support. One of them, obviously, being Ellis Genge, we touched on. I mean, he seems like a great character to have around. I mean, sitting on a few England press conferences, they are a different experience. But are those kind of the characters that you do remember from Leicester time? Because I guess everyone needs them in the team.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, the rugby's like the... One of the reasons rugby is such a great game is you have such a diverse group of characters. And I think that's what sets you apart from, you know, other games. Not that I've played any other games to any decent level, I must admit. And, you know, Genji's a great guy. We have an incredibly different taste in music, but, you know, he's a good guy. And I suppose the good thing about Genji is he doesn't mind telling people or whoever that is from the top to the bottom what he thinks. And I think that was not just in terms of the Leicester thing that happened, but also when we were sort of chatting with the PRL about the potential for a new players union, which was hilariously unsuccessful. You know, he had absolutely no issue telling people exactly how it was, and it's just brilliant.
Yeah, and what we talked about there about sort of the culture which Leicester have as well. Does he and maybe Tom Youngs, for example, Ben Youngs, do they kind of embody what Leicester have been about? Because as you say there, like what happened in the summer, but it has been a difficult time with coaches leaving, players leaving as well, and Leicester fans just crave that stability and they want to see their team back on the perch, and those players will probably help with that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, it's one of those difficult thing to really comment on, I suppose. But I think that, you know, there's guys there that's the only club they've ever dreamed about playing for. They've only ever wanted to play for that club. And that, you know, they're, you know, like Len and Tommy, their old man played for the club and they're incredibly proud to be there. You know, that's only going to be a good thing, isn't it? But, you know, I guess for them now, it's getting behind Steve and hopefully onwards and upwards.
Yeah, and on to the here and now then, Greg, for you and Wales with Dragons. How are you enjoying your time with the club? I know, if I'm right in saying, he picked up a hamstring injury, unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago. So how's the rehab with that? But also, what's it been like being in that environment? Because me and Rob were looking at the squad before, and there's some really talented guys alongside you as well.
Yeah, you know, it's, Dragons is... It's been amazing, really has been amazing. And I keep getting asked this, I suppose, and it's really hard to articulate, but when I had my first conversation with Dean, it was kind of like this whole, forget everything you've heard about the Dragons for the last 7 years. This is what I'm doing with it now. And I was literally on this Zoom call with him, just like, you know, and I've never had the opportunity to work with Dean before. But I know people who have worked with him and they all sung his praises. And you never really know though, like, because obviously people are kind of, if a coach likes you, they're the best coach ever, aren't they? It doesn't really matter what happens. But I've got to be honest, like, a man with a vision and wants to go in and make it what he says, it is unbelievable. For, you know, I literally could have been working down Tesco's, but the opportunity came up to go there and I just couldn't be happier. The boys are great. The squad is super talented. We've got like these young lads from down the road you've never heard of, but are some of the best rugby players that you've ever seen and never heard of. It's a super talented squad, really strong vision, really exciting times to be part of the Dragons.
Yeah, you mentioned kind of the blend in the squad of those young guys from just down the road, and obviously yourselves in there now, Greg, but Jamie Roberts, Nick Tompkins, they seem to be some of the star names. It seems like you've got quite a good blend there. For people who may not watch the Pro 14, is that something that's going to carry you forward? Do you think that nice blend in the squad?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that was a little bit of the conversation I had was, you know, they sort of have these internationals that then as soon as they go away, you're down to sort of an early 20-year-old that, you know, has played a handful of games. And I think where, you know, guys like me and of my sort of age that is not as old as you might think, come in is it's to kind of bridge that gap. So you're not going from a Lion or an international down to an academy kid. And I think what the job, or certainly for me, I feel is to sort of bridge that gap as much as possible and help those young lads develop quickly into being, you know, stars into the league in a couple of years, but not ahead of me, obviously.
I was just about to say, not ahead of you, Greg. But obviously the situation with Leicester happened, but did you ever maybe think about going to Wales and maybe playing in Wales anyway during your career? I know you're obviously Welsh qualified, but was there ever any temptation to go over there earlier in the career?
Yes, there was a lot of temptation, and you know, a few decisions made differently, you know, maybe that opportunity could have come around, but you know, it's difficult. You know, like for me now, annoyingly, picking up an injury when you turn up to a new club is just, it's just brutal, because you want to just get yourself involved and stake in your place. I just have to focus on playing week in, week out for the Dragons, and then see what happens after that. You know.
Yeah, I was gonna mention it, Greg. Any sort of international ambitions at all, or are you, like you say, just focused on sort of the club side of things at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's very flattering to be asked. You know, obviously Wayne's got his plan that he's doing at the moment, and you know, I've been injured, so it's not really a conversation that's on my radar at the moment. When I'm back playing and back to my best, then I'll start thinking about it. But no, I'm literally get back fit, get playing, and then go from there.
Hi guys, I'm Amber Reid and I'm a Loose Heads ambassador, and you're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Remember that mental health is a journey, not a destination.
Well, there's bigger things to think about than any international aspirations right now, because it is the Mars 15 and it is a big tour and a big opportunity for players to stake a claim to take on the Martians. And normally Mark would introduce this part of the podcast, but as we said right at the start, he's decided to leave us this evening to enjoy a few beers at his Christmas party. So Rob is going to take over the reins. I know you've done it before, Rob, so no pressure.
Yeah, I was just thinking that when you were just handing it over to me, that he'll be in the bar somewhere talking to someone about the Mars 15, surely.
Absolutely.
So the question is, the Martians have landed and challenged Earth to a game of rugby to decide the future of civilization. We've lost the toss. So the game is away at Martian Stadium and we leave on Saturday. So there's no time boundaries. You can choose any player from any era, any code, any gender. So Greg Bateman, who is your Mars 15?
I've just realised, whilst I've been trying to jot this down because I didn't have time to do it, you've basically stolen this from Space Jam. I mean, that's exactly what happens in Space Jam.
You're not we'll have to pass that on to Mark. It's his baby.
All right. So, Michael Jordan. I've thought about this not long and hard, because, you know, I've been not given the most amount of lead time leading into this. But at the minute, I'm missing a 6, an 8 and a 15. So we'll come back to it. But I'm going to put myself as team manager. I'm not playing, you know.
Really, you got to be. You don't want to miss out on a trip to Mars.
No. I'll put Genji in at Loosehead. He's tough. Do you know what I mean? They're good. Probably going to go for Hibbs at hooker.
Nice.
Aaron Jarvis at tight end, because if I'm busy in meetings, he can make good coffee. I'm then going to go for Will Spencer and Matt Corker in the row. Spenny, unbelievable rugby player, big human, yeah. Great on the socials. Matt Corker was at London Welsh, doesn't play anymore. Again, great bloke. 6, David Denton, biggest calves in world rugby. Unfortunately, can't play anymore due to concussion, but unbelievable guy, my partner at the front of the line out. 7 and 8, I need to come back to scrum half, Len, Ben Youngs, just too many good stories to share on a podcast, but he'll be there. Bit of magic at fly half, Matt Tamua. The rugby and the social side taken care of. Plus, very good coffee, average golf player, but we'll put him in. At wing, we'll go for Matt Jest. He's a top bloke. Then in the centres, we've got Noel Iceman Reed. Good player, excellent social. He actually got me punched in the face when we were in Portugal on our team trip, if you don't remember that brilliant Daily Mail article. Because I was making him do, he was doing pull-ups and I was trying to make them eccentric, and then the bouncer wasn't very happy and I never saw that Trilby hat again. Obviously, you've got to take Chief, Big Manu, in the other part of the centre. Yeah. You're playing against the Martians, you need a bit of razzle-dazzle, don't you? And then I need a fullback, do I?
Fullback, yeah. And a six and a seven and an eight. Who would be captain in all of that?
I can't give it to anyone other than Tamua, to be honest. we shared some good times and some sad times. Tamua's my skipper. I've got just a 7, 8, 15 that you need from me. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me some suggestions, lads.
I'm trying to wrap my brains here. Who would be?
We could probably just go without them. That's a pretty cool team. I'll put myself at eight, just because why not? Like, you're playing the Martians, no one really cares, do they?
Yeah, you've got speed as well, Greg. This is something that's not gone unnoticed.
Thank you very much. Just ask my missus, she'll verify. Yeah, I think we're pretty good with that. Maybe Eddie Hall would be nice. Strongman Eddie Hall. Just mix it up. I'm going to put him in there. And then at fullback, a non-rugby fullback. Let's put Tyson Fury in there. Not for like backfield coverage, but if it kicks off, you know.
He's there. And then just the backroom staff. So we need a coach, a manager, water and kit, man or woman.
Well, I'm the manager. The coach would be... So you suggested about the kit man being, or someone said Ricky Gervais before. I think he'd be an unreal kit man. I just think the sarcasm would be fantastic. Tony Walker, team manager. I think he's a frustrated coach. I'd put him in at coach. Just give him a crack, you know, put him out there.
Nice. No, that's fantastic. Taking on the Martians.
I mean, maybe like, with a bit more time, you know, I'm not sure that team's really going to be that great, but we'll have a great time. We'll have a good month away.
I can't wait to see Tyson Fury under the high ball. That's going to be very, very interesting. And of course, as well, Greg, with you being the manager, people's captain will be transported to Mars, surely.
Yeah, it's not just global, it's intergalactic, yeah.
that's got to be your new tagline going forward.
Yeah, not brewing positivity anymore, it's intergalactic. That's good.
Brilliant. Well, Greg, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you this evening for the Loose Heads Podcast and Association. We're talking with you, and it's great work that you're doing, and wish you all the best with it going forward.
Thank you very much for having me. And if you are going to put some little bits that come up here, I'll give you a code to give anybody that listens, if they want a discount or whatever, to go forward some nice gifting for Christmas or whatever. But thanks very much, lads. Really great work with Loose Heads, and the dog's about to go and make a noise, so I better go.
You're listening to the Loose Heads Podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Loose Heads Podcast.